Hello and welcome to How to Lead a Group, a leadership podcast for everybody. And correct me if I'm wrong, Jamie, but is this not our 10th episode?
This is our 10th episode.
This is our 10th episode. This is actually our final episode for this season. So this is pretty exciting. This is a milestone. We made it.
And we're still...
we're still here.
How to Lead a Group.
And still have not yet gotten a better name, which is really unfortunate.
There's always hope in season two.
There is. There is always hope. Anyway, if you just joining us for the first time, this is... where we mine our community and those that we come in contact with for the tips and tricks, the best principles that we can to help lead groups well, to shepherd and care for the people that God has put in front of us. This week we're kind of talking about the end game of a group. You've been together for a while, there's been good growth, maybe you've accomplished what you set out to do. What do you do now? How should you approach that? But before we get into that, my name's Eric Ankenman. I'm a part of the content team here at Crossroads, and I'm joined, as always, by the lovelier half of the podcast duo.
I paused because I wasn't sure if you were going to introduce me.
I know.
I'm Jamie Sims, and I'm on our communications team. Before we dive into this episode, let's pause for one of my favorite parts of each episode.
I like how you, you slow down and make this all nice.
Like I sit in the space of like getting to know your host. So this episode, we're gonna get the opportunity to offer a pro tip. We've been in groups, we've led groups, so
it's true.
Let's share a bit of our knowledge or just really touch base on what's the pro tip that you would encourage, even if it's something that's already been said. So Eric. Sure.
Yeah, so if I was going to give one pro tip to any host, and it's been, I think, probably one of the hardest things for me to actually see the value in and actually go about and do, but the payoff is huge. Just pray for your group. I mean, if you're leading a group, if you're leading anything, honestly, pray for those people. You know, if you're leading a ministry, if you're leading a nonprofit, if you're leading a family, if you're leading sports, like whatever it is, like... the single easiest and biggest thing you can do to see growth and see God actually change people's lives is pray for them. You know, my capacity and capability is pretty limited. So if I'm relying just on mine, we're not going anywhere at all. So that'd be mine. What about you?
Mine is try something and don't be afraid to fail. And I think that's a culmination of a lot of things that we've talked about. Mm-hmm. I started a group in the fall, and maybe some of the listeners are part of that group. It was a fail. But I learned some things from it, and I know when I'm ready to start my next group or try and revitalize the last one, like I have some things that I'm going to do. I'm going to have a vision for what we're doing, and I'm going to get people on board with that before we go do the thing. So
that's good. Those are good tips. So let's jump on in today. We are joined today by Molly Cunningham. Thanks for joining us,
Molly. Welcome. Hey, thanks for having me, guys.
So before we go into the topic of the day, we want to give everybody a chance to get to know you a little bit, give you our five-question rapid-fire quiz. You ready?
Sure, go for
it. Okay. What's your job, and tell us a little bit about your family.
My job is Director of First Impressions for Crossroads, so I oversee the staff that lead out our First Impressions teams at all sites. And so we just do Welcome, Connect, Belong in all of our environments, wherever we have sites and wherever we're opening our doors. We want to help people feel welcome, connected, and belonging, not just to our community, but in relationship with Jesus.
Cool. And your family?
My family, I'm married to Mike for 20 years, and I have 5 children. I have a freshman in high school, Ben Kennedy, who's in 5th grade, Libby, 1st grade, and I have identical twin 3-year-olds, Finn and Isaac, who are currently potty training, and it's epic in our home.
Oh, man. I look forward to the day when I'm not changing diapers anymore.
Yes. I'm in commitment will be able to be fulfilled after the diapering is finished.
Oh,
but my son is experiencing acne at the same time, so it's quite a whirlwind.
There's a lot of emotion going on in your house, is what you're saying.
Many, many hormones are flying through the air.
Oh, man.
So what's your middle name?
Beth. Molly Beth Cunningham.
Molly Beth. Mm-hmm. What's the best movie you've seen in the last year?
Oh, my gosh. I just saw Hidden Figures. I loved it. I loved it. I cried. I was with my daughter, and I was inspired, and just remarkably touched by that story and the fact that it's actually true. Mm-hmm. You know,
even better.
How many cats is too many cats?
Oh my gosh. I think if you have more than two cats, you probably need to have a truth discussion with your community around you, because the amount of poo and pee that they generate beyond two is probably too much for any home to handle.
Unsustainable. Yeah. What's your biggest pet peeve?
Oh my word. Oh gosh.
This moment right here is my favorite part of this question.
It's
the moment where everybody goes, I have so many things that I hate.
I know.
Which one do I hate the most?
I can't tell if it's more revealing to pause so long because you're trying to put the one at the top of the list.
You have to whittle out the ones that, like, oh, I can't say that one because that's just really weird.
It probably has to do with driving, because as much as I'd like to say that I follow Jesus, sometimes it does not express itself when I'm driving my car. So I really, probably my biggest pet peeve is the annoying driver in front of me, or the rude driver that has the Christian bumper sticker on. That's probably one of greatest pet peeves.
That's strong.
Especially if said bumper sticker says, quote, driving under the influence of Jesus. That's really bad for me. If you cut me off and you have that bumper sticker on.
Fair.
I can support that. I can absolutely support that. So today we're going to talk, like I said, about the end game of a group. And specifically, we're going to talk about reproduction, the group kind, not the other kind. Now, for a lot of people, I think the idea of a group reproducing itself is really probably not even on the table. You know, I think for a lot of us, the idea of just starting a group at all is kind of uncharted territory. Mm-hmm. So many of us may never have given any thought to what reproduce and they, like, any of that sort of thing. So talk to me about how, especially for somebody that's fairly new to leading a group, what and why reproduce, like unpack some of that for us. Why would we do that? How do we go about doing it? All of that sort of thing.
Well, I mean, I think it comes down to an idea of, like, there should always be a place at the table for anybody who wants to know Jesus and wants to grow in a relationship with him. And so I would say, as a community and as you think through even your group environment, like, do you really want to limit what God would do through your life? Do you really want to put a cap on that? Because the God that I know wants absolutely everybody to know him. Mm-hmm. And so it becomes a function of, like, how big is the front door to relationship with God? And would I get in the way of that? And would the safety and the connection and the belonging that I feel in this group that's so life-giving and good, would I want to keep that all to myself? So I think you have to wrestle with, if you're motivated to open your home or to create a space to have a group in the first place, wouldn't you want to start that group with the mindset that says, and expects that God would do far more to include more people and to help them grow? So that's kind of how I think about it. Mm-hmm. We're only limited in the leadership that we can offer people, in the discipleship that we can offer people.
Mm-hmm. So obviously there's a huge counterpoint to this whole idea. Like, we spend time building into one another and gaining trust and becoming community. Mm-hmm. So this idea of, like, then reproducing outside of it, like, that's hard to wrap your mind around, and, like, giving that up, or seeing how it transforms. So how can we position people to, like, to understand that and to, like, go after that and sending people out to reproduce? Yeah.
I think it's really a function of, have you ever talked to a grandparent that's unhappy? I mean, well, Jamie's nodding her head. Yes. I mean,
so,
maybe
yeah, you can't see
maybe
me.
there are situations out there where there are children that are born into the world that it was unexpected in their community and that kind of thing. But the grandparents that I interact with that are filled with joy, they're like, this is the best thing ever to see my children reproduce in another generation of people. There's a unique joy in the eyes of a grandparent that I think as we lead groups, we kind of need to wrap our brain around. Like, no one right now in their 20s or 30s are probably thinking a lot about that kind of season of life and what it would be like to be a grandparent. And certainly when you're starting your group, you're not thinking about that at all. But there is a unique blessing, there is a unique gift that God gives us when we have multiple generations that come from our efforts, you know? Mm-hmm. And so while it's hard to see it in the moment, and you might be experiencing abundant community in your immediate group, you won't know that joy until you allow God to take you to that place. Mm-hmm. And there's a new version of extended family. There's a way, way bigger thing that can happen when you open yourself up to it.
Yeah.
You think you're actually giving up something if you would multiply your group or expand or cleave off part of your group and kind of send some critical mass a different direction. But the reality is that multiplication effort only increases the level of love and belonging and leaning into in community. And so I don't think there's anything lost. In the short term, you might feel, oh gosh, I really like being around that person. I liked having that time on the calendar when we're getting together, and I miss that person, yes. But you know what? We're not doing this for today, right now. Mm-hmm. We get both the benefit of relationship here and relationship in eternity when people know Jesus, right? So we're not just living for what we see and what we get right now.
How did this... I don't think this is... I'm going out on a limb here, so correct me if I'm wrong. But I'm guessing the perspective that you have on this right now is not the one you've always had. So how did that mental shift happen for you? What did it look like for you to go from what I think is pretty natural, like, I'm comfortable, I like this community, this is good, to start to see that bigger picture? What happened for you that helped you make that shift?
I think just seeing the people that I had started to build into really receive the authority that God's given them. Mm-hmm. That they started to step into their relationship with him. They became expectant of him moving in their lives. They started to experience him working through them powerfully. And so when you start to see that traction and transformation in your group, you don't want to slow down that momentum. Mm-hmm. Like, you really kind of just want to release it. Yeah. And so, you know, there are a bunch of people in my life right now that I've been in groups with 2 or 3 years ago or 4 years ago that I don't get the same rhythms with, and I miss that. But I also am seeing, like, what God's doing in their lives and how they're really experiencing. The scripture talks about we are the priesthood of all believers. Mm-hmm. We basically have the authority of God to work on his behalf. And so when I see them stepping into that, it's a development process that you go through when you start to see people get ready and they start to want to reach out beyond the circle that they're in. And so I would say it would be as unhealthy in a group to have people in a group never want to move out beyond the group as it would be for the entire human race to stop having sex and having babies, because the human race would end. Mm-hmm. So I think in that functioning, when you use those powerful metaphors that are practical reality of the human race, it's the same thing spiritually.
So how you just described it right there, I think is a different sort of mental image than even what the word, like, reproduction when it comes to groups evokes. You know, like reproduction makes me think like, okay, well, I'm just gonna, you know, we're gonna get to a point and then something's gonna happen and you know, this group is gonna become too great. It's very nebulous and kind of just organizational almost. What you were talking about there, you know, is very personal. You're talking about specific leaders and almost what I've heard described as like apprenticeship. You know, there's there's a very intentional focus you have to this that leads, I think, then to reproduction. Unpack that difference for me.
Like the idea of apprenticeship?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I see it biblically. I see it in the life of Paul. Paul having relationships with people like Timothy, and, you know, in his letters he talks about the different relationships that he had where he poured into people. I think in apprenticeship, you basically offer your life and you give somebody more access to your life to see what you do, what your rhythms are, how you follow Jesus, what that's like. And there's a level of vulnerability with that because you're not doing it perfectly. You're making mistakes all the time. But in opening up your life, it creates an opportunity for you to give more, like disproportionately more to that apprentice than maybe the entirety of your group, you know? So you can have at least one or two set-aside relationships where it's like, no, I want to give you more. I see potential in you. I have a relational affinity for you that and a desire to just give more of what I have of God to you. And so without that, then everybody gets equal, right, in your group. And, you know, God's not fair, right? God disproportionately blesses. And that's weird. That's for a whole nother day, right? To unpack that in a message. But we can be unfair and give more to people who are hungering for more, who we see greater potential in, and all of that. So I think apprenticing is huge, and I'm currently doing that all the time. Like, I'm in different leadership spots and leading different groups all the time, but one group that I'm intentionally in right now, I'm not in the first chair. I'm like apprenticing from the second chair. I'm leading up, if you will, to the leader who's leading the group and sitting in the group to build into her, to help her feel more confident. And like, she has more to give the group because I'm invested in her.
So I think you've done a really good job of like explaining like how, you know, you want to build into this person and you know, you have the opportunity to, and you don't have to be equal with your time and doling that out amongst the group. But for a leader out there who's, like, feeling like they're getting to this point, can you help them identify potential apprenticeship relationships that they can seek after? Like, what do you look for in that person?
I would say, I'm going to rip this off from Brian Tome. This is classic Brian, but I look for fat people.
Strong.
No, fat people. F-A-T, not P-H-A-T. Let's be clear.
Nope, it's fat.
Fat people.
Nope, that's what we're going for.
Right. It's an acronym, people, okay? Don't be offended. It's F, faithful. A, available. Teachable. So I'm looking for somebody that has had some level of testing. You know, they've proven themselves faithful. Their yes is yes. They're showing up. You know, they keep commitments, all of that. I'm looking for somebody that has some capacity that's available, like not just physically available. Oh, you've got this time on the calendar available to do this, but I want to make my life available. I want to create space. And then teachable. Like, there have been a lot of faithful and available people that I've dealt with who are not teachable, who I would not apprentice because they won't take direction, or, you know, they're difficult in receiving feedback. they don't like it, or the process feels too difficult for them. So if you're teachable and you want to put your life in submission to Scripture and you want to receive that through me, and you're faithful and available in the process, then I'm going to spend more time with you. And that'll get you a seat at my apprentice table, so to speak.
You mentioned, you know, having a seat at your apprentice table. Like, you mentioned one example of how you're doing that. Can you give me some other examples of what it looks like practically for you to help build leadership capacity and skills into someone? How do you help them get reps? How do you, like, mm-hmm. what does it look like practically to develop an apprentice?
Well, I mean, access is a big thing. I've already kind of talked about that. Just giving people access to your life, inviting them into what you're already doing. Mm-hmm. So where are the spaces where I can say, hey, come along with me. Be on mission with me in this thing. So I look for opportunities to bring people into my work at Crossroads and just share different spaces of my life with them. Mm-hmm. That's a huge thing. I would say also in different seasons of my life, it looks more structured and formalized and committed to in a structure like huddle. So where I want to invest specific disciple-making tools into people and make kind of a covenant agreement with them where I say, hey, I am pouring into you for the next year, and I want to give you lots of access to my life and mm-hmm. formalize that. So those are kind of the two ways that I do a lot of that apprenticing mm-hmm. right now.
How do you know when they're ready to enter into this?
I think you ask someone, right? Mm-hmm. You're upfront with what your expectation and what your hopes for them would be and your desires. And then you gauge, where are they? And most people are freaked out, right? They're like, oh, no, I don't, you lead the group far too well, or you're like, I could never fill your shoes. Well, that's okay, because you don't have my feet and my shoe size. Like, that's all right. God gave you a different fit.
Yeah.
And I just want to build into you and who God made you to be. So, I think, did that answer your question? That help?
Yeah. I think so. Yeah. Like, take the flip side of that. How do you know that they're ready for you to set them loose?
I think a lot of that is actually a function of character over anything.
Mm-hmm.
Character and teachability and some time.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, we want it all to go fast, fast, fast. And right. really, character stuff doesn't develop fast. No. So are there times that I can see that a person has gone through difficulty well? Like, how have they suffered well? Have I seen their character over time? What's their fruitfulness look like?
Mm-hmm.
Do they really operate in the Spirit? Do they display love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control? And that comes out of them? Yeah, they're probably ready, because if they have the Spirit and they're demonstrating fruitfulness, and I see that there have been times that they've made good decisions when they could have made poor ones, or they've learned from poor decisions.
Mm-hmm.
They have the indwelling of God in them. I have to set them free. And then I have to make myself available, because they may need some help
right.
and need to come mm-hmm. back and say, oh, I'm struggling with this. I'm dealing with this in my group. Or,
mm-hmm.
And so that's kind of some of the place where I am in a lot of relationships right now, where I've set a bunch of people loose and they kind of come back to me as like adult kids, sort of, you know, like, and we have more consultant kind of interactions, mm-hmm. like spiritual parent to spiritual child. It's more of a peer-to-peer thing and a conversation versus a directive thing.
Mm. That makes sense.
All right, so kind of to bring this to a close, make this super practical for our leaders. What's one thing that they should try this week? Like, what's the pro tip that they just need to do? Whether it's about just looking, approaching, reproducing their group, mm-hmm. or, you know, finding someone to apprentice.
Yeah. Well, I talked about fat already, but I would say, you know, almost kind of full circle to what you said at the beginning, Eric. Like, you have to pray for God to reveal these people to you, because sometimes God has somebody in mind that you wouldn't normally pick.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would say pray for God to reveal kind of your, quote, Timothy. Mm-hmm. You know? Who is somebody that you can invest in? Who is God laying it on your heart to disproportionately give time to? Mm-hmm. So that'd be mine.
The one last question that I'd love to have you unpack a little bit. You know, it's really easy, I think, for a leader, especially somebody that's new to this, to listen to you talk about apprenticing leaders and all this and go, like, I can tell she's got 1,000 stories. This is, you know, she's the expert. I could never do that. You know, I just don't, I feel overwhelmed at the prospect of it. Is there a story you can give me that kind of humanizes that a little bit and helps us understand? Like, it's like, even for the expert, it's not perfect. Like, you're still going to make mistakes. Things are still going to go sideways, and that's okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I would say my husband and I, we led a group a number of years ago that was a part of a journey at Crossroads, and we formed the group through just a random sort of matching process, totally unknown people to us. And we had a spectrum of people. We had different races. We had different socioeconomic situations. We had different mental stability factors involved. And it was a real challenge leading that group. And I think we... our hopes, like our naive hopes, were like, oh, like maybe this could be a group that would last. Or we were like waiting for the miraculous to happen in a 6-week period of time. And it sort of just fell flat. The people did grow. They did gain some things, but we didn't grow traction as a group. Mm-hmm. And we were really kind of measuring ourselves on, you know, do people want to stick around? Do they want to do a group? And for 6-12 months, it was like we were just beating ourselves up because it felt like a total failure on our part. Like, maybe we could have helped unite people a little bit more. Maybe we could have smoothed over some of the rough edges and all of that. And the reality is God had something in store for those people, and that experience had a lot of value. And he redeemed that experience for a lot of those people. And they went off and kind of did some other things that God was calling them to. So... in the moment, when it's hard, when there are challenges, it kind of always feels like failure. Mm-hmm. But it's really just a matter of trying to lean into God in those times and say, all right, God, what are you showing me? Mm-hmm. I probably was more worried about what would other people say about the success or failure of my group, because I was kind of a model to other people for this random matchup process. So I probably put more pressure on myself versus what other people expected of me. And so that wasn't rooted in God.
Yeah.
You know, so
that makes sense.
It's hard because life is messy and groups are messy. And that's, I would say that's exactly where Jesus was all the time, was in the mess of relationships and right where people were. And that's exactly where we need to be, in the struggle to help people.
That's awesome.
Well, thank you for joining us.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks, guys.
That's great. That's a great closing kind of summary of what it looks like to lead groups and think back over these 10 episodes. It's like, it's messy. It's messy. And God is always doing something in us that we don't recognize, and doing far more in this group than we realize. And it's oftentimes not till 6, 12, 2 years later, like whatever, like... Mm-hmm. Oh, that's what you were doing there. Mm-hmm. Okay, I get it now. So that's awesome. Well, thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks for joining me, Jamie. This has been a good season. This is awesome. So thank you to all of you listeners for joining us. And stay tuned as we see what happens with potential season 2.
Yeah.
So take it easy, everyone.